Dante felt a cold pulse of nether from the mailed man. The man pointed at Blaze, and Dante planted his feet and struck the attacker with a column of shadow. The small, dark sphere in the man's hand evaporated with an angry hiss, and he yanked his hand back, shaking it, glaring at Dante with eyes full of unfairness. Blaze and the last swordsman had squared off, trading blow for blow, but the swordsman's size and range fell back in the face of Blaze's rage. He swung heedlessly, sword whipping through the air with the full strength of his arm, and just as Dante thought the boy had overextended, he drew his sword level with his ear, muscling the swordsman's downward counter behind his head, then stabbed straight forward into the man's neck. The man gurgled blood and fell face first into the embers.
"How did you know we were coming?"
the man in chainmail asked in a tone of open surprise. Dante answered with a spike of nether that would have split the body of any other man. This man's face creased as he cupped his hand as if to catch a ball and split the shadows to either side of his body. His nostrils flared.
"Who taught you that?"
"You learn fast when someone's trying to kill you every week," Dante said. He saw Blaze advancing, sword angled from his body.
"Rest easy, then. This will be the last attempt we need."
He swung his arms at Blaze as if he were heaving a sack of wheat, and it was all Dante could do to divert the fires to boil away into the sky. Blaze bent like a sapling in a gale, but somehow kept his balance enough to swing a swift, light backhand that clipped off the last knuckle of the man's middle finger. For the first time in the battle, Dante saw fear cross the man's face.
"What was that?"
he cried, skipping back a couple steps to try another strike. Blaze stepped forward, wary as a cat. Dante held his breath and focused on the point 6 feet above the man's head. If the man went for Blaze now, he could do nothing to stop it. Blaze jabbed like a fencer, and the man dropped back again. The two were too close for Dante to release the thing above him. The tendril of energy between himself and the summons felt tight as a string tied around his heart. Blaze chopped at the man, and he actually held out his arm. The sword struck it below the wrist, and the metal of the blade and the tight rings of the armor flashed like a storm. Blaze yelped and slung away his sword, stumbling back. The man smiled, curled his bloody fingers to finish off the boy, and that was when Dante released it, pouring on the nether till the sheer drain forced him to his knees. A swirling pillar of white fire leapt down from the point of his focus. An all-consuming crackle roared through the camp like the sky-high bonfires the people lit on Alden's Eve to remind the sun of its strength. In that instant, the man's eyes flicked up and his brow wrinkled like he'd splashed mud on a fresh robe. He bellowed and clenched his fists, and the pillar faltered but kept on coming, smashing him into the ground. It disappeared as quickly as it had come, wisps of smoke trailing up from a half-dozen tiny fires on the man's cloak. Dante took a hesitant step, flinching when the man raised his head.
"Well, now you've done it," the man said, skin sloughing from the left side of his face. "You've gone and killed Will Palomar."
His eyes widened, and his breath rattled away. The body relaxed, flopped back against the dirt.
"You've got to help him, quick," Blaze said. "He was trying to kill me." "Robert, you dunderhead!"
Dante took a woozy step. Not again, he thought. But he clenched his jaw and forced away the gray stealing over his eyes. He crossed to Robert's limp body. Blood wicked through the man's cloak. Dante couldn't tell if it was his or from the two men dead beneath him. His head pounded like the last time he'd been drunk, both the days of the during and the misery of the after. He balled his fists and rubbed his eyes. He lowered his ear to Robert's nose and heard shallow, uneven breathing. Half his cloak was singed. Bright white blisters stood out on his cheek. Dante pulled back Robert's cloak and saw a deep gash along his ribs, leaking blood down his side.
Some of the hair had been burned from his chest.
Dante wiped his nose.
"What happened?" he said.
"What does it look like? They damn well stabbed him."
"How bad did he get burned?"
"Can't you tell?"
Blaze said, crouching down beside him and clasping his hands together. "I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not a physician."
"Well, help him, damn it!"
"Okay!" Dante roared.
He flexed his fingers and called to the shadows. He sensed a reluctance in their substance, a reticent anger even, for whatever sense that made, but he pressed back until they folded to his will. Remembering how he'd shucked off their weariness in the chase through the woods, he concentrated on the source of Robert's bleeding. For a gross moment he thought he could see beneath the skin to red muscle and white bone. As if it were his own, he could feel the sick tickle of flesh knitting back together. His eyelids fluttered. He forced himself to keep going, arms quaking, chest heaving, then felt himself fading and fell back on his ass, gasping for breath.
"Is he fixed?"
Blaze said, ripping the shirt off the dead man and daubing it over the blood that had washed down Robert's ribs. Dante tried to say, "kind of," but choked instead.
He bent forward, coughing into a closed fist.
Robert started coughing too, spitting blackish blood past his lips. He groaned, but his eyes stayed shut.
"Is he going to make it?"
Blaze said.
"How should I know?"
Dante battled down an inappropriate yawn.
"I am so tired right now."
"He's moaning. Good sign or bad?"
"I think ideally there should be neither bleeding nor moaning." Dante pressed his palms against his eyes.
"What are we going to do here?"
Blaze's eyes snapped to his face.
"What are you suggesting?"
"I'm asking."
"I don't know," Blaze said.
He laced his hands together and huffed into them. "He can't travel like this."
Dante lowered himself to his elbows.
"What if they've got someone else?"
"Then we fight them too."
"How did you know they were coming?"
"I heard one of them cough," Dante said. He glanced around the fire, shut his eyes. The skeletal animal was gone.
Blazer's eyes drifted toward Dante's pack.
"How did they find us?"
"I crept up on them when they were talking. One of them said they'd tracked us. They were confused we were on horseback."
"How would they know?"
Blaze scratched the top of his head. "Maybe someone recognized us on the road. Pass the word."
"God knows there were enough eyes out there."
"I think he's doing better," Blaze said cautiously. "His breathing isn't all ragged anymore. That was scary."
"That's good."
"Were you just asleep?"
"No,"
Dante blinked. He struggled to sit up.
"If we tried to ride, we could kill him. I don't think I could ride right now either. That's not a lot of options."
Blaze nodded, gazing into the low fire.
"Risk it."
"I think we've got to."
"I guess I'll take first watch."
"Okay."
"I'm going to wake you up if he looks any worse,"
Blaze warned.
"Okay."
"Dante's a stupid idiot."
"Okay."
"What?"
"I said, go to sleep already," Blaze said.
He shredded another shirt and pressed it to Robert's wound.
"Okay,"
Dante said, and sleep folded over him like a glove. Dante sat in the dark and waited for the dawn. Long stretches of silence were broken by the night noises of the woods, hoots and screeches, and the furtive shuffling of small animals. At least there was no wind. He couldn't have taken the wind in the trees. Blaze had dragged off the bodies while he'd been asleep. There was that, too. The ground was thick with the shine of dried blood. Clouds obscured the moon and stars. He had no idea how long he'd been asleep. It felt like 15 minutes, 20, but Blaze had assured him it had been 3 or 4 hours. Robert remained asleep. His breathing and pulse sounded, well, they existed. He didn't know what should sound good for a man who should probably be dead.
Blaze had stoked up the fire, but he didn't think that was causing Robert's sweaty brow or flushed face.
Dante ate from the saddlebags and drank a full skin of water,
frowning over the unconscious man. He meant to give the Nether another shot once he'd absorbed a little food. He didn't know how to feel about the lie he'd told Blaze. For all he knew, the attackers had followed their tracks. To find them in the first place, though, the mailed man who called himself Will Palomar had followed their feel. The book's feel. Dante's feel. He didn't know which. Maybe it was both. He did know their mission was too important to threaten by telling Blaze the truth. He needed Blaze, needed Robert, needed their eyes and their arms if he was going to get to Narashtovic. They needed him too, didn't they? Robert would be dead now without his aid. They'd all be dead if he hadn't seen the men plotting their attack, if he hadn't sprung them from the gallows. Not that that should buy their loyalty, exactly, but there was a give and take here. He wasn't keeping them around for his own ends alone. In any event, they were big boys. They'd made their decision to stick with him. If they thought things were getting too dangerous, they could make the decision to leave.
A couple birds started chirping. A few bugs whirred and thrummed, but most had already died in the frost. The survivors wouldn't last much longer.
At the first touch of dawn, Dante rose, walked around the fire, worked his blood back into his limbs. He still felt tired, but no longer painfully so. He knelt over Robert's unconscious body and closed his eyes and emptied his mind. When he sent the shadows into the long brown scab on his chest, he felt nothing. He saw no change in the flesh. He closed his eyes again, reached out to the wound again, but it was as if the Netho was passing under a bridge and disappearing before it reached the other side. He set his mouth and tried at least to assuage the fever. He touched Robert's brow. It still felt hot. He sighed.
Dawn broke, gray and gradual. He let Blaze sleep. It was clear they wouldn't be going anywhere until Robert had woken or croaked.
Maybe it was the false hope of the daylight, but he doubted the Temple men would even know their latest agents had failed for at least a few days. There was no use punishing Blaze with sitting around waiting for something to happen when he could hold things down for himself. For once, Dante didn't feel like reading. He watched the fire burn and thought about the summers in the village.
"What's going on? Why does hell look exactly the same as Earth?"
Dante jerked his head. Robert's eyes were open, crinkled in pain.
"You're awake! You're brilliant."
Robert lifted his head and looked over his bandaged body.
"How'd you get the wizard?"
"I smote him with fire," Dante said. Robert frowned at him.
"Can never tell if the youth of today are being serious. A weakness of character, I think."
"You're right. I'll play dead until he ran away."
Robert's arms shook as he tried to sit up. He lifted his shoulders clear of the ground, then fell back, squeezing his eyes shut for a moment after the impact.
"That was unwise," he said.
Dante bit his teeth together.
"Stop making things worse. We're already losing time."
"You've always got more time," Robert said.
He chewed his beard.
"Well, until you don't."
"Indeed," Dante said. He decided against waking Blaze. It would help if at least one of them kept in fighting condition. Dante felt like he'd been sewn up in a sack and beaten for 3 days straight. He could probably ride, but if at that moment a one-armed 8-year-old challenged him to a fight, he'd either run or cheat.
"How's Blaze?" Robert asked, as if reading his thoughts.
"Unhurt."
"Is that right?"
He chuckled. The sound was like gravel grinding together.
Robert Hobble himself gets flambéed by a sorcerer and stabbed by a bumbling bodyguard who only knows to grab the handle of his sword because it's the part that sticks out when it's put away. And that kid comes out without a scratch.
He wiped the sweat of his forehead and smiled with half his mouth.
There's something wrong with that.
Dante shrugged. He does seem preternaturally lucky.
Maybe he's just got good taste in friends.
Robert stared at him with pain-hooded eyes. Dante kept quiet.
So what are you, exactly?
Why do people keep asking me that?
Oh, please. I'm a young man, that's all. I've known plenty of young men,
Robert said, turning his head to face the sky, and none of them can do anything like what I've seen you do. Dante hunched up his shoulders.
That's why I'm learning all this. I don't want to be like everyone else. Lots of people say that, and 10 years later you couldn't pick them out in a crowd.
Robert shifted his hips to resettle his weight and stopped at once. He bared his teeth and let out a long breath.
I don't suppose you've got anything for curing sword wax.
I already tried, Dante said. Inexplicably, shame stole over his face.
Ah, guess the Dominion of Steel still holds sway, then. For now.
Robert chuckled, then clutched himself.
Lyle's holy bastard, that hurts.
Then don't do it.
What's cracking your acorns?
This is just the second day, Dante said.
He clenched a handful of leaves, flung them into the fire.
This is supposed to be the easy part. And I suppose this is the part where I tell you nothing's easy, as if that's supposed to help.
Robert sighed and gingerly folded his hands under his head.
It just doesn't seem fair.
Robert laughed some more.
Could be worse. You could be me.
Dante nodded, glancing up a moment later.
You're doing okay. I've heard worse.
I bet this feels like a joke to you,
Dante said, uncertain what he meant by this.
For about the last 10 years, everything's felt that way.
While Dante was busy trying to gauge if he was serious, Blaze stirred beneath the folds of his cloak. The boy emerged into the daylight, red-eyed, hair sprung out like a dandelion. He gave the world a sour look and belched.
You're disgusting, Dante said. Shut up!
Blaze draped his cloak over his head and shoulders and clutched it under his chin so he resembled a clothy mountain or a sack with a face.
What time is it? Time to make me some breakfast, Robert said. You're up, in a manner of speaking, he said from his place on the dirt.
Blaze swung his face at Dante.
Why didn't you wake me up?
You're up now, aren't you?
I'd have gotten you up,
and I'd have punched you for it.
Blaze jumped up, flapping his cloak against the cold, and wandered around the fire to lean over Robert.
Does it hurt much?
Only always, Robert said.
I thought you were going to die. You should have seen all the blood. It looked like someone dumped a spittoon on your chest.
Robert closed his eyes and made a noise through his nose.
You know what? Forget about breakfast. Well, it did, Blaze said.
He straightened up and his eyes drifted to the tethered horses.
They've settled down a bit.
Yeah, Dante said. Moving the bodies may have helped.
I think they got a little spooked when I was chopping them up.
Blaze folded his arms at the sudden silence.
What? One of them was moving. Well done, Robert said. Now will you stop recounting the recent horrors and get me some God's damn food? I am not your maid, Blaze said,
opening up one of the packs and rummaging around.
Have some bread. Marvelous.
He brought it to Robert, who spent a minute propping himself up before trying a couple bites.
Bread's a dry substance, you know, Robert said,
spitting crumbs.
"Will water sate His Majesty?"
Robert pursed his lips. "If you don't have anything stronger."
"You know we don't," Blaze said.
He gave Dante a look. "You could get off your ass at some point." "I'm plotting our next move," he said, twisting a blade of grass between his fingers. "While you're up, grab me a bite."
"I'm going to spit in it."
"Oh, no, don't trouble yourself on my account," Dante said. Robert laughed through his nose and winced. He'd live, but it would be 3 days before he felt well enough to ride. 3 days waiting in the woods, while the world moved on, and Narashtovic drew 3 days closer to war. Dante spent each one training with the Nether till he was close to passing out, vowing they wouldn't be delayed again. Sooner or later, sooner, according to Kelly, and if anyone outside the dead city itself would know, it was him. It would take more than 2 boys and a drunk to stop what was marching out of the north. It would take an army, if it could be stopped at all. A kingdom could be lost to the wounds of Robert's body and the want of 3 days. If he hadn't been frustrated enough to punch down a tree, Dante might have laughed. Chapter 10 Robert had to stop within a couple hours the day their path resumed, and for the first few days the march was broken by an equal time spent resting away from the road. Dante and Blaze kept a guard at all times, switching between watch and sleep while Robert slumbered or merely stretched out and waited for the throbbing ache to subside. Dante preferred to eat up the hours with sleep, but sometimes it took an hour or more to slip away. Things would go faster once Robert was better, he told himself. They would lose a few days, but it wouldn't always be these stuttery steps of 6 or 8 stops a day. They would make it in time. The woods gave way to open grassland, peppered with trees and the creases in the land. The road held out. The grass rose to their waists on either side of the rutted dirt, swirling in the winds that swept unbroken from the north, carrying with it the promise of winter. Traffic was heavier than normal, or so Robert said, but nothing like what they'd seen the day Wetton burned. The Chancet forked after 3 days, and they curved along its tributary. The plains rose so imperceptibly they couldn't feel it in their steps, but then the grass gave way to soft, rolling hills, blanketed in stubby yellow and grey grasses that shot long-tailed seeds into the air when they led their horses off the road to graze or rest or camp. They lit no fires in the open land. There was talk on the road of a wider struggle, of bands of pike-wielding men marching through the fields. Rumour had the king's legions assembling in a counter on Wetton and encamping outside Bressel. But, according to the few travellers they spoke with, the enemy had no strongholds, no apparent homeland whatsoever, and the militia spent more time leaning on their own pikes than carrying them. The cavalry combed out the glens and ponds around the cities, but found nothing more than the miserable camps of refugees from the cities. After a week's travel, the dirt seemed to crackle under their feet, and they saw snow streaking the hills ahead. It was no more than a dusting, 2 or 3 days old, and it melted in the sun that stayed strong through the day. As dusk fell, the sunlight caught the chimney smoke of a town. They'd passed plenty of villages on the way, dropping in on a couple to purchase food, but mostly skirting them entirely, cutting through the open lands until they could reconnect with the road. None seemed under siege, nor were any more than a few hundred strong, resident-wise. Dots along the river, where 2 roads crossed, or traders found deep water moorings and docked their cargo of grain or hemp or hay or wood. The town they looked on, in the buttery sunlight, could properly be called a town. It could only be Shay. When they encamped, Dante took Kelly's letter from his pocket and rubbed his thumb over the sigil-sealed lump of black wax. What did it say? An introduction of Dante to his long friend Gabe? A warning?
A plea for aid? He put it back away, and dreamed of a city built of the hollowed bones of giants. They woke early, and tramped through the stiff dirt of the road, breath fogging from their noses. Dante pressed a fist against a knot in his lower back. A night in an actual bed, or even a thick lump of straw would be a nice thing. A fire, hot food. He liked to think he was too hardy to need such things, and in a way he was already used to the sparer ways of the road, but if they popped up, he wasn't about to turn them down. The town grew nearer, resolving itself into individual buildings lining the river. He bared his teeth, realizing he still hadn't told Blaze and Robert the full nature of their travel. He meant to go to Narashtovik, they knew, and somehow that could stem the tide of whatever was taking the cities of the south. They didn't know its end would be the killing of a woman. They didn't know he sought a knowledge of the cycle only the dead city might reveal. How did Callie know Gabe? How big a role did he intend the monk to play toward them? If they were old friends, and Dante believed they were, perhaps it would all be spelled out in the letter, and when Gabe questioned him, or gave him advice, or whatever Callie expected from him, the two he traveled with couldn't help having questions of their own. Dante watched the town grow nearer. He should tell them. Give them the story on his own terms. Act as if he had nothing to hide. But the day wore on, and soon they were too close to stop without looking foolish. And then they rode past huts and the small, squatty homes of full families, and it was too late. They'd meant to reach Shea in 6 days from Callie's shrine, perhaps a week if they hit a delay. Instead, it had taken them till the afternoon of the 12th day. 10,000 people, if you had to guess, and most of the ones they rode by on the way to town gave them looks. Not dirty looks, exactly, but the kind with questions behind their eyes. Rumor had reached them then, but not battle. They killed a few minutes wandering, turning down progressively broader streets, reminding themselves what housing and other people looked like. "Fun though this is," Robert said, head following an Eveside painting of a stag's head, dipping its tongue into a mug. "It's neither enlightening nor intoxicating, and thus must be said to be beside the point." "It's probably near a churchyard or some of the other temples," Dante said, glancing down the street. He thought he saw the clean lines of Gashin's red shield a few blocks down. "Probably," Robert said. He pulled up beside a heap of rags containing a man, and eased himself down from his horse. "Well met, good man." The pile grunted at him. Robert smiled at it, then turned to the saddlebags and extracted a hunk of bread. "We're looking for the monastery of Menok," he said, "but all this food's weighing us down. Afraid we'll never make it unless we get rid of it."
"Got anything of a more fluid nature?"
the man in rags said, pulling himself to a sitting position and squinting up at them.
"Ah," Robert said, favoring the cobbles with a wry smile. "That lack is one of the many tragedies we wish to unburden on Menok's ears."
The ragged man accepted the hunk of bread and snapped it in half. He munched down a couple bites, glancing between the three of them.
"Been on the road a while,"
he said, crumbs flecking from his mouth.
"A fortnight or so," Robert said, taking a bite of the bread he'd kept.
He nodded.
"Busy travel through Wetton?"
Dante tensed. Robert bit his lip, as if trying to remember, then jerked up his chin.
"We passed around it about a week ago."
"Is it true that they burned it to the ground?"
"They?"
Dante said.
"The rebels,"
the man said, frowning.
"The black cloaks."
"It was on fire," Robert granted, "but not to the ground as such. You'd still recognize the city if you saw it."
The man's whiskered face twisted up.
He set his eyes on Dante.
You mean you haven't heard of the rebels? From what I hear, all the Southlands awash in blood.
We've been on the road a while, Robert said, cutting Dante off.
Weren't there others on the road with you?
We're men of the cloth, Robert said, surreptitiously pulling his cloak over his sword. Our vows allow us to pass words only from necessity.
Hell's bells, and I've been flying off with the questions, the man said.
He forked his fingers in the sign of the Owl of Menoc, gaze drifting between the swords at Dante and Blaze's backs.
These must truly be trying days if the monks of the Grey God won't travel without steel at their side.
You have no idea how trying, Blaze said, glaring down the causeway. The monastery, Robert said.
He placed an arm over the bandages under the mailed vest he'd taken from the body of the sorcerer Dante'd killed.
Of course, the man said.
He pointed them down the street and described a couple turns.
My apologies for delaying you, sirs. Might I ask you make a prayer for me of Menoc?
We'd be some damned awful monks if we wouldn't, Blaze said. Thank you, my son, Robert said, working his way back into the saddle in a careful series of limb maneuverings meant to minimize stress to the vast scab on his chest.
Your aid will not go unrewarded.
He took the lead, leaving the other two to catch up.
Dante spurred on his horse, sending a cluster of men wrapped in debate scattering from his mount's heavy hooves.
Over the years I've worked out a sort of system of classification for the kinds of questions one may need to ask or hear while on the road, Robert began once they'd made their turn. There's the rhetorical and philosophical questions, i.e. the ones you can ignore or maybe nod at if the asker's giving you a look like you should have been paying attention. There's the immediate, practical, and useful questions, i.e., where is a good pub? And, for the love of the gods, man, where's the nearest pub? And then he said, raising a finger,
there are the stupid, why did I just open my mouth questions, the kinds that are a fancy way of saying, I'm too dumb to see my next birthday, such as, please, sir, I'm too drunk to make it to the goldsmith's with all these heavy bags. Do you know a safe place I might lie down for an hour? Or, who's been burning down all the known world?
He shot Dante a daggerly gaze.
Guess which one yours was.
He won't remember it by tomorrow, Dante said, face prickling with heat.
You won't either, if you wake up with an axe in your brain.
Am I supposed to be able to understand that?
I suppose not, since evidently you don't even know asking stupid questions tends to get a damn sight more thrown back at you.
I know that. I was trying to find out if you knew anything about them we didn't, Dante said.
His face lit up.
Look, there it is.
The monastery was a tall, narrow structure of dark stone. Its upper windows bore shadow-cut glass of what Dante presumed were important scenes from the god's life. Its entrance receded from the street, giving way to a well-tended garden of small shrubs and dead flowers. At the garden's center was the boulder of Menoc, meant to represent his imperturbability, his gravity, the solidity of his pensive presence next to the mercurial Carvajal, or many-faced Silidus, or the crimson rages of Gashin.
What do we do with our horses? Blaze said. Hide them under that rock.
Robert winced as he got down. Dante didn't think it was for his wound. He tied the reins to the open gate at the street entrance and rolled his hands at the boys to hurry it up. They tied their horses and scampered after Robert up to the thick wooden door of the monastery. By the time they got there, someone had already opened the door to his knock.
May I help you?
Said a skinny, sallow man, little older than Dante.
We're here to see Gabe, Dante said.
Brother Gabe is deep in meditation.
Then he's probably bored, Blaze said. Let us in.
The man smiled.
Focused meditation is the closest we men may come to understanding the wisdom of Menok.
How long's it going to be? Dante asked.
As long as it takes,
the man said, tipping his head back.
Even a meditation on the worms and the dirt may take days to unravel. Especially those kinds, since in thinking we know so much about them, in truth we know so little.
Robert squinched up his eyes.
Is there somewhere we might wait? We were sent by an old friend.
All friends are old, the man said, for all of us are made of dirt. And what's older than dirt?
Rocks? Blaze said.
But rocks turn into dirt when they're old enough.
Dirt dust?
The man opened his mouth, then closed it and raised his brows.
Have you ever considered our order?
Can't say I have, Blaze said.
He wriggled his back.
Got anywhere to sit down? All that riding's put a pain in my ass.
You can wait in the parlour.
The man glanced over their shoulders toward the gates.
I'll have a boy see to your horses.
Thanks, Robert said. You just let us know when Gabe wakes up.
Meditation's the opposite of sleeping.
Sounds awful, Robert said.
He snagged Blaze and Dante by the sleeves before the conversation could go on and drew them toward the room the man had indicated. The floor was of slate. The walls painted a steely grey. A statue of a droop-eyed dog sat vigilant in the corner. For all the room's simplicity, it was furnished with padded benches, and they plunked down and stared at each other.
"Dart Gabe will be like that,"
Robert said to the look on Dante's face.
"Mostly it's you young ones who want to preach at you."
"I don't preach at you," Dante said.
I meant monks and things, Robert said, waving a hand.
Suppose it can be applied to all youth, now that you mention it.
You're the one always explaining things for hours.
Because you're too dumb to know things for yourself.
Dante set his mouth and tried to think of a reply.
You sure Menok's not the god of death?
Blaze said, raising a brow at all the grey and black.
He was originally just this guy who sits around and mopes, Dante said, examining the walls. When Aron was expunged, people did start to look to Menok about death, but it's not the same.
Aron?
Robert asked, face suddenly drawn.
Dante unlatched his teeth from the thumbnail he'd been biting.
You know about Aron?
Enough to be suspicious of the fact you do.
They sat with their thoughts. Maybe a quarter hour went by before the man who'd met them at the door stuck his head around the corner.
"Gabe will see you shortly."
"Good to know the universe has been solved," Blaze said.
He kicked his legs against the base of the bench and waited some more.
"Next time, suppose we can go to Sim's temple instead, get some apples, fresh pears, some— Ah!"
He bolted upright as a massive, fur-covered beast lumbered through the door on two legs. Blaze fumbled out his sword and held it before him.
"Get out! I'll hold it off!"
"Put that away!" Robert hissed, barring his arm over Blaze's. The thing in the doorway blinked at them. Dante saw human-like eyes in its face. That it wasn't furred, but deeply bearded. That the man's whiskers climbed so far up his cheeks they nearly met his eyelashes.
"He's a Norrin, you sack of rocks!"
"Boo," the man said.
His voice rumbled like the gurgles of the earth. He'd had to duck when he walked through the doorway. 6.5 feet, Dante guessed, if not taller, and at least 300 pounds, though it was hard to tell beneath his loose black cassock. For a moment he couldn't see his ears, then noticed they were just small and round as fresh-cut coins, and pressed flat against his densely haired head.
"A Norrin," Blaze said.
"From the north," Robert said, smiling with embarrassment at the monk.
"Usually."
was too cold for my blood, the man said.
He smiled, showing broad, flat teeth that looked like they could grind Dante's bones.
You're here to see me?
You're Gabe, Dante said.
That's right, the Norin said.
We're friends of Callie's. He sent us to you.
Callie?
Gabe blinked at them. The old man, Dante said, biting back further words. He had the notion, reinforced somewhat by the fact he was a hermit, Callie's popularity wasn't great. What if, in a slip of his twilight years, he'd sent them to an enemy instead? Or a friend he'd forgotten he'd quarreled with? Or someone he didn't know in the slightest? You know, Blaze said. Lectures a lot, thinks he's quite funny. Gabe chewed on his mustache, nodding blankly. Dante reached in his pocket and took out the letter. He sent you this? Gabe's hand reached out. It was large as a plucked chicken.
Oh, he said, scratching the wax seal. Callie, it's been a while.
So you know him? Dante said.
Yes,
Gabe said, showing his teeth and looming forward till he seemed to take up all the room.
And now your fates are sealed.
Blaze gasped and went for his blade. Its bright snap cut over Gabe's barking chuckles.
Ah, she's up to no good again, then, the Norin muttered.
He considered them a moment.
Come with me.
They followed him deeper into the monastery. He glanced balefully at a cell that would barely have room for his shoulders, let alone all of them, then led them up a set of spiral stairs and down a hall into a kind of sitting room or library. A great many books lined the walls, at least, though who knew with pious types. Gabe settled onto a mat, sitting on his heels, and nodded the others into some normal-sized chairs next to the window. An odd, dreary light cut through the smoke-stained figures worked into the glass. Gabe slid his thumb under the seal with a dry crack and unfolded the papers onto his lap. Dante examined the window while Gabe examined the letter. The figures were impressionistic, shadows of men, but he thought the window depicted the scene of Menok soothing Gashin's anger before he could blast the land with sunfire after he discovered his priest, Enon, had lain with his daughter.
You didn't read this, did you?
Gabe asked once he'd finished a couple minutes later. Did the seal look tweaked to you? Dante said.
I assume you're a clever lad, if Callie took you up.
That may be, he said, meeting Gabe's stare, but however much I may have wished, I didn't read that letter. Gabe frowned, then nodded.
So, you're off to kill Samarand.
Kill who? Blaze said. Gabe glanced at Dante, then laughed, a bubbling thing that may have been called a giggle if it hadn't sounded like a bull choking to death. He thinks it will stop all the things that have started in the last few weeks, Dante said, staring at his hands. The fighting, the burning of Wetton. He says Samaran's driving it all. Gabe scratched the beard on his neck.
I think he overestimates her.
Blaze gaped. Her? Quit shouting, Robert said, touching his temple. Dante twisted his hands around. Callie thinks she's a firebrand, that she's whipping up the radical elements of the Order of Aron and leading them into open battle. He thinks with her death, they might fall back from the brink to a more reasonable course. What do you think? Robert said to Gabe.
He shrugged. I think someone else will step into our place.
So it's a fool's errand?
I didn't say that, Gabe grumbled.
He frowned at the filtered light in the murky window.
I've renounced all violence as an abomination against the Brotherhood of Man. But if I could, I'd pop that bitch's throat with my bare hands.
I'm getting mixed messages, Blaze said.
From a moral standpoint, I condemn all sides, Gabe said. From a practical standpoint, killing her would be grand. I just doubt whether that would put a stop to anything.
What's so bad about her? Dante asked.
How long are you here for?
Long enough to learn a little about the woman you all so dearly want dead.
Samaran's a priestess, Gabe began in a soft voice. For a long time, the god she serves has been worshipped only in secret. Do you know what they do to anyone caught with a copy of the book you carry?
Cut off the hand that turns its pages, Dante said.
Gabe pushed up his lower lip. They used to kill you. The March of Progress.
His mouth twitched down as he remembered more.
When she was young, she'd give speeches about how believing in secret was living in slavery. She resented that we'd be persecuted for following a god they want us to forget, but was integral to the forging of the world and its people. We all resented it, of course, but some of us recalled the lessons of the Third Scour, and thought it best to continue to live in the fringes than to provoke the war that would obviously follow the path she advocated. There had always been extremists who considered their freedoms a worthy cause of all our lives.
You're saying they're wrong, Robert said.
Aran's glory isn't lessened if his supplicants can only bow to him in the shadows. He's a god, not a king. In truth, he doesn't need our prayers and sacrifices at all. He helped forge the fixed stars themselves for the sake of the gods. He doesn't need me telling him Aran is great to know it's true. But it does help keep us focused on matters celestial rather than earthly. Anyway, we'd have been crushed like a beetle, Gabe said.
He paused a moment, glancing from Dante to the others, then back, as if rearranging the long-abandoned furniture of his mind. He cleared his throat. A shadow crossed his face.
Samarand. She became de facto voice of the dissenters. Over the years, they swelled their numbers to a full third of our ranks. She herself rose to the council, though the continued unpopularity of her views, combined with the insistence of how she expressed them, prevented her from reaching the direct line of succession. She was charismatic, fiery, plain-faced, but when she spoke, a light took her eyes, and men sworn to celibacy hoped Aran might forgive them for their thoughts. The surprise would have been if she didn't attract a following. Nor were the things she rallied behind wrong, exactly, just impractical. The belt of the Celicet is broad, splintered to its own interests, but there are those things that may reunite them, however temporarily, and the resurgence of the faithful of Aran is one of them.
Gabe fell silent, staring at the creases of his massive hands. How did she come to power, then? Dante said to break the silence.
Gabe looked surprised to see others in the room. The usual way, he said, looking out the window.
He brooded for a long moment. Distracted, Dante thought, perhaps by old memories. The Norin closed his eyes, as if reaching some thorny decision, then went on.
The head of the Order dies suddenly and unexpectedly, and she takes advantage of the vacuum to reassemble the hierarchy in the manner she considers proper.
Did she kill him? Blaze said, perking up.
Cali thought so. It's why he left, along with the fact those of us who'd been content to stay hidden no longer had much role in the Order, and left Narashtovic, where it was safe.
Dante licked his lips. You disagree with Cali?
Who said that?
Gabe clasped his face with his palms, running his fingers through his thick beard.
always putting words in my mouth. He's probably right. The old man was old, but not that old. When he left, well, his death was unexpected. Convenient enough to render an accident unlikely. Samarin's power had grown stagnant. Did she do it? Probably. Even if she didn't, the way she strong-armed the council was reprehensible.
He gave Dante a strange look.
She's the one who revived the idea of using the cycle as bait for powerful recruits. That should give you some idea of her methods.
In other words, Robert said, gathering his words and passing them out one at a time, menace she may be, but there are plenty of others who'd take her place, easy enough, if she were to wake up with a knife in her face.
More or less, the Norrin rumbled.
Robert glanced between the boys. What do you think?
What I think is I don't know what the hell's going on, Blaze said.
He tried to catch Dante's eyes.
This sounds like the kind of thing that gets you hanged. Remember that? Hangings?
Gabe itched his nose.
Well, only if you're caught.
Know what I think? I think this thing's a runaway boulder, Robert declared. Difficult to pry out of a slope, but once the descent's begun, the only way to stop its momentum is to throw a bunch of bodies in its way until it's bashed itself to a halt.
He glanced between the boys. We can either fling our own bodies beneath it, in the hopes of slowing it some tiny fraction, he said, shaking his head, or let lots of other people waste themselves on it while we go get drunk, he concluded, nodding emphatically.
That's the most cowardly thing I've ever heard, Dante said.
He stood and gazed out the window into the filth and decay of the street.
Callie thinks it will work. That weed be enough to stop it.
We have to reach Narashtovic. We have to try.
Can't promise to follow you there, Robert said, shaking his head. Sounds virtuous enough, sure, but also like I'd end up 6 feet under. I'll go.
Blaze rose and joined Dante at the window.
I don't know why. It sounds dangerous and stupid, but I'll go.
Dante nodded. He listened to the muted shouts and whip-pops of the city streets, thinking how to say thanks.
Well enough, Gabe said. Callie told you about the dead city's views toward foreigners.
He said they're a little aloof.
I've got something that should keep them from killing you on sight. A token that traders use to prove they've been there before without causing problems. It's why Callie sent you here.
Ah, Robert said, ticking his nails on the pommel of his sword. Only if it's no trouble.
No more than anything else.
Right then. Got any food? Preferably something you don't have to eat with a hammer, Blaze said.
There's a kitchen downstairs. I'll have a boy fetch the token. You'll stay the night.
Wouldn't turn it down for a full keg, Robert said.
He patted his stomach. Well, I wouldn't turn it down leastwise.
Well enough, Gabe said. I'll see to your quarters.
Dante turned to go and felt a heavy hand weighing on his shoulder.
A word, young master.
Dante nodded and watched the others go. Blaze waved on his way out the door. Dante took up a chair and scratched the wispy hair on his chin. He needed to learn how to shave.
How do you know Callie, Gabe?
The Order. And before that we fought on a war together.
Dante tried to imagine Callie swinging a sword or charging a line of armsmen. He couldn't even see him without the grey beard or bent back.
Which one?
Gabe sniffed.
The one 20 or 30 years after the one before it. When a new group of eager young men had had time to grow up without its memory and decided it was time to leave their own mark on the world.
Oh, Dante said. That one.
I left when he did.
It was clear the place we'd called home had become something different, something we no longer felt right to support.
Thus, why you came to lie low in the receptive arms of Minnok?
No, Gabe said.
He painted Dante with a scornful gaze.
I came to Minnok because of a philosophical understanding with the god. We should spend our lives brooding by ourselves. It makes more sense than the egotistic struggles for supremacy of every other sect, including the one whose tome you carry.
Dante didn't reply. Gabe let loose a long, slow exhalation and removed some of the edge from his voice.
Tell me how you came here.
We followed the road from Wetton.
I'm speaking in a broader, less literal sense.
Ah. Dante cleared his throat. He thought a second, then, in abbreviated detail, told the monk how he'd heard of the book hidden in the temple outside Bressel, of the men that had come after him once he'd taken it, how they chased him and Blaze to Wetton, how he'd met Callie when preparing to rescue Blaze from execution, how he'd sprung Blaze and the other prisoners and fled to Callie's shrine to hide and recover, how Callie told him the secrets and menace of Narashtovic, and why he had to go. The whole tale took less than 10 minutes. When he concluded, he thought how unfair it was that everything that had happened to him since the fall could be summed up so readily. So much got lost in the telling.
Let me see the book,
Gabe said at its end. All right, Dante said. He picked up his pack where he'd set it by his feet and held it to his chest. Gabe raised his eyebrows. Then Dante opened it and drew out the cycle. He handed it over.
I see,
Gabe said, tracing the cover image of Bardon with one thick finger.
He opened it. I see.
He flipped a few pages, then leaned his nose toward the text. Dante saw his eyes scanning lines. His mouth opened a little, showing those big, flat teeth. He turned to the back, to the sections written in Narashtovic, and Dante tried to read the emotions that roiled across the stolid flesh of his face. Surprise, amusement. Wariness, urgency, at last back to guarded brooding.
I see.
What?
I see, he said, why they want it back so bad.
You said they use it to discover recruits. Callie, too.
Yes, but they use copies. Things they can afford to lose if the trail goes cold or the thief goes down with a ship.
Dante actually blinked. This... Gabe ruffled his beard and tucked in his chin, chuckling in a way that wasn't entirely happy.
I once knew a man who hated Samarnan's idea of how to use the book, thought it manipulative, dangerous to the order. He once joked about switching out the copy for the original. See how smart they felt without their special book.
I think I've met that sense of humor, Dante said. How can you tell it's the one?
You know who's conscripted to transcribe these things, Gabe said, offering Dante a rare smile. Men like me, bored, with bad eyesight. The mind wanders, you misspell a word, transpose things. Maybe you editorialize a little. Every copy has errors.
He lifted the book.
This one's clean.
Oh, Dante said. Gabe tapped his fingers together. Meaning?
Objects collect power through age and use. That one's different from its copies.
I can't tell if you're speaking literally.
Me neither.
Gabe twiddled with one of the black cords around his neck that dangled from the cassock.
You should tell Blaze to name that sword he used when you freed him from the Law of Wetton.
Will that make it... He trailed off, not wanting to sound stupid.
special?
If not, it might make him think